Hey everybody, it's Emily coming back at you with a new episode of my case study podcast entitled Case Studies with Emily. Just a quick disclaimer, I may not pronounce certain names correctly, but it's the information that counts, right? So this week I have been learning about blood stain analysis in my forensics class, and I chose the case of Jody Arias to explain the focus of bloodstain analysis in her case. So stay tuned if you want to learn more about this case. All right, let's get started. So like I said earlier, I've been studying bloodstain analysis, and this week I chose to do my case study on Jody Arias. So, Arias and Alexander, the victim, you will find out later, had met at a conference in Las Vegas, Nevada, in 2006, while he was living in Arizona and she was a resident of Palm Desert, California. By the following year, they were a committed couple. After only 5 months as a couple, however, the two went their separate ways in late June 2007, but still maintained a sexual relationship. On June 9, 2008, Alexander's body was found in a pool of blood in the shower of his Mesa, Arizona home by friends. In the bathroom, they found Alexander with a gunshot wound to the head, more than 24 stab wounds, and a deeply and wildly slit throat. Investigators later determined that the murder had occurred 5 days before his body was found on June 4, 2008. Arias quickly became the focus of the investigation. She was indicted on first-degree murder charges on July 9, 2008 and arrested in California soon after. Arias initially denied any involvement in the killing despite the discovery of her DNA mixed with Alexander's blood at the crime scene. But she later changed her story, claiming that she and her ex had been attacked by two masked intruders. After killing Alexander, the criminals decided to let her live, she told the police, adding that she chose not to alert the authorities at the time because she feared the intruders would seek revenge. Excuse me. Testimony in Arias' trial began in early January 2013, which was aired live to the public and became a media sensation. The following month, Arias took the witness stand in her defense from where she would testify for 18 consecutive days. Arias stated that she had killed her ex in an act of self-defense. She testified that Alexander had frequently abused her and that she killed him after he came at her in a fit of rage when she dropped his camera. She also claimed to have suffered memory loss as a result of emotional trauma experienced during the incident, with a psychological expert corroborating that she was suffering from PTSD, which, if you didn't know, is post-traumatic stress disorder. On May 8, 2013, Arias was found guilty of first-degree murder. 5 jurors found her guilty of premeditated murder, and 7 found her guilty of both premeditated and felony murder, a verdict that sparked elation among Alexander's family members. Oh, goodness. However, the judge declared a mistrial in the penalty phase after the jury deadlocked on whether Arias deserved the death penalty. The penalty retrial began in October 2014 with a new jury revisiting the same evidence presented, the first time around. This time, the focus was on the psychological makeup of both parties, with the defense attempting to portray their client as a vulnerable woman and Alexander as emotionally and physically abusive. In March 2015, the second jury was unable to agree on Arias' sentence as well, removing the option of the death penalty and leaving punishment terms to Judge Sherry Stevens. On April 13th, Arias received a life sentence without the possibility of parole after 25 years, and she began serving her term at the Arizona State Prison Complex, Perryville. Although Arias appealed her conviction and sentencing, the process was bogged down by transcript errors and omissions. The court record was finally declared complete in April 2017, nearly 2 years after the appeals process began. In that summer, a 2018 deadline was established for the defense and prosecution to file their legal briefs. Additional complications surfaced in October 2017 when Arias alleged in a civil suit that the head of her legal team broke attorney-client privilege by disclosing confidential information for the express purpose of financial gain and his own public redemption in a tell-all book about the case. All right, so that's pretty much all, like, a big, good, detailed description of the case. And that kind of ends on a sour note, so my bad on that. But, so basically, we have the victim, which is Travis Alexander, and he was the boyfriend of the suspect, Jodi Arias, she was convicted of killing him on first-degree murder charges. And basically, they had a really complicated relationship. She lived in Arizona. They met in Arizona at a conference, and then she actually was, like, heavily involved in church. And I find it very ironic because I did some research, and she said that in her previous relationship before Travis Alexander, she was saying that she was going to save herself for marriage because religion was really important to her. But with Travis, she didn't. I find that very ironic. Anyway, so we also have the judge from the final trial, and that was Sherry Stevens, as I mentioned. Okay, and I don't know if I mentioned this, but the friends that... Oh, I did mention this, now that I recall. The friends that found his body were, like, good friends, and they were wondering where he was, and one of those friends was named Daniel Freeman, and he actually called Jodi, and it was a very troubling message. I'll let you Google that and listen to it yourselves. It's just troubling. And then on Jodi's defense, we have attorney Kirk Nurmi. Super sorry if I'm mispronouncing names. Alright, so when and where does this all take place? Obviously, it was in Mesa, Arizona, which is where, that's where she was born, I believe. And, well, where his house was, too. And that was the case kind of is a really weird gray area because a lot of it happened in between 2008 and 2009, but, like, cases went on forever until about 2017 when all those files kind of went through. So that, I put, it was about 2008 to 2017, and she's still currently serving. So I guess you could pretty much extend it to now. All right, so evidence, let's talk evidence. So as I mentioned probably numerous times, you're probably sitting there like, oh my gosh, when will this girl stop talking about bloodstain analysis? But yes, a big part in this case was bloodstain analysis, specifically because her DNA was found in Alexander's blood. And with him having severe wounds, including over two dozen stab wounds and a gunshot to the head and a slit throat, there were tons of different blood stains. And this was all in the shower. So he had a pool of blood, which is where blood is, like, going in, like, insane amount of blood in one specific area. You've probably seen, like, dozens of pictures. And we have blood spatters from high-velocity blood spatters, if you want to be specific, because it was a gunshot. I don't recall finding the actual bullet at the crime scene. I do remember seeing pictures. So they found the bullet, and then it went straight through his head. I'm pretty sure. Well, either way, it went straight through, which caused a high-velocity blood spatter on the wall next to the shower and in the shower. And then, of course, you have the neck severing. So, slitting. Anyway, I'm sorry, I'm a mess today. Anyway, you have that. And so, he also had some passive blood from that, which means gravity pulled it down to the bottom of the shower and on his clothing. And they found cast-off stains from the weapon that was used, such as a knife, we're assuming. Anyway, let's talk means, motive, and opportunity. So obviously, these two had, like, a really complicated relationship. And I did some research, and they were in rocky situation, when like rocky circumstances, I must say, whenever this all went down. Basically, he was like feeling stalked by this girl, Jody, and she didn't like that. She wasn't always texting with him, and he wasn't always responding when she wanted him to. It sounds about like every single teenage girl in the United States right now. But she just had enough of it, and she wanted to see, I think at the time it was her ex-boyfriend. So she went over there to put him in his place and get attention. Well, she probably got mad, and she just took matters into her own hands. So means is kind of unclear, just because we don't know if she has the ability. She had no necessarily like background of being physically active or strong, but all I know is it doesn't take much strength to do a gun. And I know the gunshot was the fatal wound, so after that she went overkill on the ex-boyfriend. And then motive. I think she just wanted attention. She didn't get what she wanted from Alexander, so she decided to take matters into her own hands and said that since she can't have him, no one else can. That kind of mindset. And opportunity, she made the opportunity. She was living in a different state. She flew over, or I think she either flew or she drove over to where his house was in a rental car. And then as soon as the deed was done, she drove off, and then she returned the rental car. No problem, no suspicion. So she made her own opportunity. So things aren't looking too good for her. As I said earlier, the legal outcome was she was found guilty of murdering Alexander and sentenced to 25 years without parole in prison. And this was after two trials. So it was a long, long case. All right. As is every episode, we have a reflections period. And this is completely opinion-based. You can totally have your own opinion. It's like a free speech thing. You just have your own opinion. And so mine, I personally think this case is famous because of its insane, like insanity. I know that doesn't really make sense, but let me explain. Like, okay. We all know that, like, psychotic girlfriend who, like, strangles practically, not, like, legit, but, like, suffocates their boyfriend. They always want attention. They always want to be around them. They can't do anything. They have to give them attention all the time. I get these vibes from Jody. So I feel like it's very relatable. And, like, it's not hard to, like, understand that this actually happened because it's everywhere, except people don't normally take this sort of action as a response. I think it's shocking, but yeah, as I said, it's not that shocking to where it's like impossibly true, you know what I mean? I also think it's interesting, she kept changing her story, and I found that extremely frustrating. Like, what is the truth, and why is she so focused on, like, we just want to get to the bottom of this so justice can be served. Like, come on, man. Why are you doing this? Why are you holding this up? So honestly, I think it has something to do with her reputation. She wants all eyes to be on her. She wants to look like the victim, even though I believe she killed him. So, like, it's very frustrating to me how, like, we don't truly know if she did it or not. There was obviously evidence that put her there, which is most likely happened, but are we ever 100% sure about anything? Hypothetically speaking, yeah, no, we're really not, and it's really aggravating. I know that's, like, a thing that happens, like, in all cases, practically, but, yeah. So, I think she wants to protect her reputation, not sure exactly what she's trying to protect and how she planned on protecting it, but either way, she's doing her time in Arizona's facilities, and, yeah, so that's all I have information-wise. All right, so to wrap it up, I mentioned this last week in my last week's episode. I'm tripping over my tongue, but this is my final podcast ever because my forensics class is ending this semester. We changed classes in the middle of December, So it has been a pleasure getting to share some of my case studies from my forensic science class with you guys. And thank you for all of those who are tuning in, maybe some faithful subscribers or listeners. I'm very appreciative of your time. I hope I haven't wasted your time. I hope you find this very interesting. I also encourage you to take a look into the interesting world of forensics. And some of these cases are very interesting and almost like troubling, but in a really cool way, or if you're twisted like me, yeah, you'll find it very interesting. I also encourage each and every one of you to maybe start your own case study podcast. Spread the forensics cheer because it's Christmas time. Speaking of that, happy holidays, you guys. I'm not going to get to say it until, like, forever. So, hope you're having an amazing Christmas season. So, with that, I'm going to sign off. Thank you guys for everything. Bye.